Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Targovax second quarter 2017 conference call. Today, I am pleased to present Øystein Soug, the CEO, and the CFO, Erik Wiklund. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Speakers, please begin.
Well, good morning and good afternoon to our listeners. Today, my name is Øystein Soug. As has been mentioned, I'm the CEO of Targovax, and with me today we have the CFO, Erik Wiklund. I will be referring to a presentation that was sent out this morning and that can be found on our website. And we go straight to page 3, which includes the highlights from the first half of 2017. And as many of you will remember, the biggest headline for the half year was the data in TGO1 in resected pancreatic cancer that was presented in the first quarter, where we showed an interesting signal of efficacy, which Erik is going to talk you through a bit later. Also, we have 5 additional clinical trials that we are running at the moment. 3 of them are currently recruiting, and 2 of them started to recruit patients in the first half year, namely ONCOS-102 in checkpoint inhibitor refractory melanoma and TGO2 in colorectal cancer, which are being conducted in Australia and New Zealand. On the financing side, we upgraded our listing to the main board of the Oslo Stock Exchange from Oslo Access, and we also raised 206 million Norwegian kroner, that is 26 million US dollars, in June and July. And last but not least, and not mentioned here, is that we have a good team in Targovax management already, and it became even stronger by including Erik Wiklund as the CFO in April. One thing that isn't mentioned here, but that came out last night, was the fact that we are going to present 3 posters at ESMO in September. So that is also a bit of a highlight right now, at least. Turning to page 5, we will start on a very short introduction to immunotherapy. And as many of you will know, when you read about immunotherapy in the newspapers, they are usually referring to checkpoint inhibitors. And checkpoint inhibitors have proven to have a fantastic effect in some patients. And what you can see on page 5 is a melanoma patient that has been treated with Yervoy. And clearly, that type of effect in an indication that had a very low prognosis before checkpoint inhibitors has opened a lot of eyes, and many people started to believe in checkpoint inhibitors after 2011, and this is the reason why. So do the analysts. On page 6, you can see a collation of analyst expectations for the market growth of immunotherapies, i.e. primarily checkpoint inhibitors, as we go forward, and many believe that this is quickly going to become a market of double-digit $1 billion in sales, driven by checkpoint inhibitors. But there is a problem with checkpoint inhibitors that you can see on page 7. They work fantastically well in some patients, but in most patients, they don't work at all. The indication where they work the best is in melanoma, which is the arena where most of the immunotherapies have been tested out, so it's natural. That's also where you have combination of various checkpoint inhibitors approved. But in other indications, the typical response rate is in between 20 and 30%. But the fascinating fact that checkpoint inhibitors work so well in some patients and actually cure patients and do nothing in other patients has created a flurry of research into this area to find out what can be done in order to achieve the same type of response in patients that do not respond to checkpoint inhibitors today. And what we see is hundreds of studies being conducted in combinations with checkpoint inhibitors. And the reason for that is that one thinks that a priming agent added to a checkpoint inhibitor can probably have a great effect. And that is a race that we are taking part in with our 2 platforms, as you can see on page 8. Both of our platforms are priming agents. They will program the immune system to produce relevant T cells to kill cancers. And whereas the oncolytic virus will program the immune system to kill cancers of a particular tumor found in the cancer cell, the neoantigen vaccine, TGO1, is designed to attack RAS-mutated cancer cells that are relevant in 20 to 30% of all cancers. And we'll go into some details on these platforms. We'll start on the virus platform. Turning to page 10, the mechanism of action of the virus is that we inject this intratumorally, i.e. we inject the virus into the tumor of a patient. The cancer cell then lyses, or the cancer cells in the tumor lyse, and the antigens are being released out of the tumors. Then APCs, or dendritic cells, they pick up the antigens and bring the antigens to the lymph nodes, where production of specific T cells are started. They circulate in the body and they identify tumors and kill them. Another way to express this is that the virus induces the tumors to release the barcodes, the definition of the cancers, so that the immune system can start produce the killer white blood cells, the T cells, that are designed specifically to kill the cancer cells of that patient. We have one trial already conducted with the virus, and the results you can see on page 11, or the highlight results of that trial. What we did in this trial was to take 12 patients. They were all terminal or near terminal in seven different indications, and we gave them monotherapy ONCOS-102. Before and after the treatment, we did biopsies in order to count the CD8 positive T cells. So these are the white blood cells that actually do the killing of the cancers. And as you can see here on the gray green bars, 11 out of 12 patients did respond to the virus. The best patient responded 1,300 times, or had an increase of 1,300-fold of the CD8 positive T cells. And five of the patients had more than an 8-fold increase. What we don't know is exactly what sort of increase is clinically relevant here. We also don't know what sort of absolute level of T cells is clinically relevant. But we do know that there was a very strong correlation between this data, the increase in T cells, and the survival of these patients. And also anecdotally, we know that the patient that increased or had the greatest increase in T cells lived for 3.5 years only as an effect of the virus treatment, which of course gives a good hint on efficacy here. We also saw in this trial that out of the five patients that responded the best, two of them were ovarian cancer patients and two of them were mesothelioma patients, which has guided us in the design of the next studies, which you can see on page 12. So the second light blue box here is the first trial in seven indications, 12 refractory patients. That's led us into starting trials in melanoma, mesothelioma, ovarian and colorectal, and prostate. And going through these trials in a bit more detail, the trial on top, the melanoma trial, the phase 1 in 12 patients, is being conducted at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and is a proof-of-concept trial to prove that our virus can turn cold tumors hot and thereby enable checkpoint inhibitor refractory patients to respond to checkpoint inhibitors again. What we do here is that we take 12 patients that have stopped responding to or never responded to Optivo, Optivo plus Yervoy or Keytruda. We give them a few rounds of the virus, then wait a bit, and then we put the patients back on Keytruda. So what we're then checking for is the T cell count and also whether the patient will respond again to Keytruda. Because obviously, if a checkpoint inhibitor refractory patients start responding again to checkpoint inhibitors, then we are on our way to fulfilling the promise that immunotherapy has, that I mentioned in the beginning, that we're able to create this fantastic response that we see with checkpoint inhibitors in more patients and in more indications than the checkpoint inhibitors do today alone. And although this is in melanoma, it's a proof of concept trial, so we think that if we have good results here, that type of response can also be seen in other indications, and it may lead to trials in other indications as well, not only melanoma. The mesothelioma trial is clearly different. That is a classical first step in a registrational program in mesothelioma. As I mentioned, mesothelioma was one of the best responders in the first phase 1 trial. And what we do here is we have a 6-patient safety lead-in before we branch out into two arms, where one arm gets standard of care chemo and one arm gets the combination of chemo and our virus. This is an indication where there are few available treatment options for the patients, so we get access to first-line patients. These are much healthier patients that we saw in the phase 1 trial. And This is a very small indication. We expect that good results can lead us to a next trial that potentially can take us to a market approval in this indication. The third trial is in ovarian and colorectal. That is, it starts as one trial with both indications, and then it will divide into two separate trials, one in ovarian and one in colorectal, in total of four arms. This is a big trial, 78 patients. The administration is not intratumoral, as in the other trials, but intraperitoneal, i.e., we infuse the virus in a saline, in an indwelling catheter, twist the patient a bit, and expect then the virus to find the virus in the colorectal or the ovarian region of that patient. The background for this trial is that checkpoint inhibitors hardly don't work in ovarian and colorectal. So this is a very obvious area to try to combine the checkpoint inhibitors in order to find a clinical response at all. And the hope here on the side of CRI and Ludwig, who initiated this trial, is to take MedImmune's durvalumab checkpoint inhibitor and combine it with the best virus on the market, which at least back then when this trial was designed was our virus. So they came to us, they called us and asked us if we wanted to participate, which of course we did. This trial is being, to a large part, paid for by our collaboration partners, and we are not the sponsor of this trial, so we have less control of the timelines. But the first step is again, as I mentioned, some safety data, which is going to be released not very long after we have started the trial. And the trial starts in the second half of this year, and we expect to have the first data in the first half of next year. The fourth trial is in prostate. That's a small trial that we're doing with our Czech partner, Soto. They have a DC therapy, or dendritic cell therapy, in phage 3, which they want to combine with the virus. Pretty much the same logic as the trial above. They did the due diligence, contacted us, and we are producing virus for their trial. And we share the data, and we will also get 1 month of monotherapy data on prostate for the virus alone coming out of that trial. So an exciting program, much exciting data coming out of this program. And the job for us now is primarily to include the patients and then wait for the data coming out of this. So that's one platform. The second platform is the TG-RAS vaccine platform. And I'll give the word over to Erik.
Thank you, Øystein. So moving to the TG program, we're now on page 14 in the presentation. On page 14, you can see an overview of how the development in 10-year survival rates have been over the past 40 years for different indications. So for indications like melanoma, prostate, breast, etc., we've really seen a strong improvement in the long-term survival and the prospective survival for these patients are these days pretty good. However, if you look all the way down at the bottom, you can see pancreas. In pancreas, nothing has really happened over the past 40 years, and long-term survival still sits at below 5%. So clearly an indication with a very large unmet need. What's interesting about pancreatic cancer is that the RAS gene, which is one of the most frequently mutated genes in cancer, 20 to 30% of all cancers have mutated RAS. But in pancreatic cancer, that number is about 85% of patients. So particularly in pancreatic cancer, RAS is a very interesting target. What we have done is design a cocktail of peptides that act as antigens that mimic all the relevant RAS mutations that you find in pancreatic cancer. So you find 7-point mutations in pancreatic cancer that covers 99% of patients, and each of our 7 peptides mimics or acts as an antigen to each of these mutations. We inject the peptide cocktail together with GM-CSF as an adjuvant. GM-CSF triggers the innate immune response. Dendritic cells arrive at the site. These dendritic cells then pick up the peptides, transport them back to the lymph nodes, where you get production of CD8-positive and CD4-positive T-cells that are RAS-specific. These T-cells, they then travel around systemically in the body and identify any cell that displays mutated RAS epitopes on its surface, and then target that cell for destruction. So what's elegant here is that you're using cell surface-displayed epitopes, mutated RAS epitopes, to identify these cells rather than trying to target the intracellular RAS protein. So that way you can target RAS without actually having to transport anything into the cell. This program has an interesting history, and we're now on page 17. We do in fact have 10-year survival data from earlier trials that were done on this program, and I'll explain how that's possible. This program was initiated by Norsk Hydro back in the late 80s. They came up with the initial concept, did the chemical work, did preclinical work, and treated in total 230 patients in various trials throughout the 90s. Towards the end of the 90s, Norsk Hydro made a strategic decision to discontinue their pharma program. And most of the projects were either sold off or discontinued, including this TG program, which was sold off to a Danish company at that time. Nothing happened to TG for about a decade until in 2010, when surgeons in Norway did a retrospective analysis of outcomes for resected pancreatic cancer patients, so pancreatic cancer patients that had their tumors surgically removed. And what they found was that certain hospitals in Norway had better patient outcomes for this group than others. Initially, they thought this was due to more effective surgery, but looking further into the data, they saw that the best performing patients, in fact, were patients that had been in these TG trials with the RAS vaccine back in the 90s. And the survival curve that we show on page 17 is an example of this. These are 20 patients in a trial with TG monotherapy in operated resected pancreatic cancer. And remarkably, what was seen was that 20%, 4 out of 20 patients were still alive 10 years after surgery. In a comparative group of patients treated at the same time and place with the same methods, 0 out of 87 patients were alive. This triggered the surgeons to say, well, this is just too good to sit on the shelf, and they were able to attract some seed funding to buy back the technology, and they formed Targovax. So Targovax was really formed on the back of this data. And the initial plan was to try and replicate this data that we see on page 17 in a modern setting with the modern standard of care, which is today adjuvant treatment with gemcitabine chemotherapy.
And turning to page 18, you will see the results that we presented at ASCO based on this trial that was started in 2012 and is starting to read out now. As Eric mentioned, the trial has 32 patients, and the 19 first patients were looked at after 2 years, where 13 out of them were alive, that's 68%. And comparing with historical trials, we see a range from 30 to 53% on two-year survival. So that is enough for us to say that this is an interesting signal of efficacy, and we're very happy about these results. The median survival was 33.1 months from surgery, and the same in the last ESPAC study, which is the European Society for Prostate Cancer Research. You saw 27.6 months median survival. All of the patients, bar one that died very early, showed TG-specific immune activation, and we think that is also very important and very well correlates with the data from the very first Norsk Hydro trials, that as soon as the patients get immune activations, that seems to have an effect on survival as well. And the safety was good, and the drug was well tolerated. So, turning to page 19, it's just a schematic overview of how the development programs look for this drug. We're in the second box to the left, the phase 1-2, and we are waiting for that set of 32 patients to be completed in the first half of next year. The remaining 13 patients, they have just received a slightly alterated administration regimen, and we expect and hope the results will be along the lines of the first 19 patients. In addition to this trial, we also have an ongoing trial in colorectal cancer. That is a phase one we're doing in Australia and New Zealand. And the background for starting a trial in colorectal is twofold. One, as you've seen on the previous page, is that colorectal cancer is a very large indication, where almost half of the patients do have RAS mutations. So it's interesting from that point of view. This is an indication that we should develop in the future. But also, in resected pancreatic cancers, the patients do not have a tumor. So I think where most P53 people in this area, they believe that you can immune activate patients, that they also expect you to be able to produce relevant T cells to kill cancers. We haven't really seen yet the ability to get these T cells into the tumor. And in pancreatic cancer, where the patients are resected, there is no tumors to see it in. So we do this trial also in order to get access to patients that do have a tumor that we can investigate to confirm that we can get the T cells into the tumors. We're also doing this partly in combination with Keytruda. And if we're able to show that we're able to induce T cells into the tumors of the patients, that is going to be very interesting news from a cancer vaccine point of view. This is all being synthesized on page 21 into our clinical trial program with timelines. As you can see here, we have these squares indicating interim data and full data sets coming out of the various trials. And so far in the first half of 2017, we had one yellow box. That is the data we talked about on the pancreatic trial already. In addition to that, we indicate that we might produce data or interim data on the melanoma trial, the mesothelioma trial, and also on the colorectal trial during 2017, while most of the hard data is coming out in 2018. And then we think particularly in melanoma, with the proof of concept data towards the second half of the year, is going to be particularly valuable from an investor point of view. But again, the next 18 months are going to be exciting for the companies from a data point of view. Turning the page to finance, I give the word back to Erik.
So the major event in finance-wise that happened in the first half of 2017 is the private placement, where we raised a total of $200 million in proceeds, followed by a subsequent repair offering with 6 million Norwegian kroner more. So 206 million NOK in total, or about 26 million US dollars. This raise puts us in a position to deliver on the clinical program that Øystein just went through, and securing all the data points through 2018 with some buffer. Cash at the end of Q2 stood at 116 million NOK. That's before counting the private placement, which was in our account after the closure of Q2, so to that figure you have to add the 200 million. Net cash flow for the quarter was negative 32 million NOK, or 4 million US dollars, and the annual run rate for the past 1 year, 12 months, 102 million Norwegian. We expect that run rate to increase slightly over the next period as we start more clinical trials. Current runway, roughly 300 million NOK, which takes us into 2019. Over the first half of 2017, we've also seen a healthy liquidity and turnover in the share, with average daily trading of about 10 million Norwegian kroner, and current market cap of Targovax is about 1 billion NOK. In March, the share listing was upgraded from Oslo Axess to the main board on the Oslo Stock Exchange. On page 24, we have an overview of the current ownership or major shareholders of Targovax, as well as the key international investors that participated in the private placement. The private placement, we saw about one-third of the allocation go to international investors, which we are very, very pleased with. Some long-only specialist biotech funds, as well as biotech-focused or hedge funds with a biotech focus, and also some Swedish investors. So we saw a good diversification of our shareholder base, and we're able to expand internationally. HealthCap, all the top three shareholders, HealthCap, Nordea, and Radforsk, participated in the private placement, and they remain the top three owners of the company, with HealthCap as the largest shareholder with 23.6% ownership. Moving to page 25, we have an overview of the major milestones and value inflection points going forward. For the first half, as we have summarized in this call, probably the major event was the 2-year survival data in the TG01 trial in resected pancreatic cancer. We listed our shares on the main list on the Oslo Stock Exchange, and we started two trials, the TG02 trial in colorectal cancer, as well as ONCOS-102 trial in melanoma. These trials are now up and running with patients included. Over the next period, or second half of 2017, we expect to initiate two more trials, the prostate and ovarian colorectal trials with the ONCOS-102 program. And we're also planning to release interim data from three trials, the melanoma, mesothelioma with ONCOS, and the TG02 colorectal trial. These will be interim data points from a subset of patients, mainly safety and potentially some immune activation data. In 2018, we expect to report more efficacy and harder data, and we're really looking forward to 2018 as a major year with several interesting value inflection points and important news. So with that, I conclude the formal part of the presentation, and we are happy to take any questions from the callers.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for the speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. Our first question comes from the line of Juan Serrate of Edison. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, Øystein and Erik. Thanks for taking my questions. So my first question is regarding your ONCOS clinical program. I mean, you mentioned hot and cold tumors. Could you give us a quick overview on what a cold tumor is as opposed to a hot tumor and how ONCOS can have a therapeutic role here?
Of course. I think that's a very good question, and I think the jury is still out as to what is a cold and what is a hot tumor. What we see and what we reported from our phase one trial was the relative difference between pre and post treatment looking for CD8 positive T cells. And what we were able to see was that from virtually no signal in staining, we were able to drive up the signal 10, 100, up to 1,000 fold for the best patients. Interestingly, although a small patient subset was only 12 patients, we did see a nearly linear correlation between the fold increase in CD8 positive T cell count inside the lesion and overall survival, which was statistically significant even in such a small number. So it does seem to indicate that the stronger the increase in CD8 positive T cells, the more meaningful the effect, clinical effect. Mm-hmm. However, of course, we don't know how these patients would have responded otherwise. So it is a difficult question, and I think something that we will gain more clarity on as the field overall progresses.
All right. All right, thank you. And another question on ONCOS. For your ovarian and colorectal cancer trial, could you tell me what is the product that will be in the control arm? I mean, since it's a control trial, what will be the comparator?
That is standard of care.
All right, with the R.
Clinician's choice.
Okay. Okay, thanks. And my last question is regarding TG01. For the potential phase 2-3 trial, how are the partnering conversations going?
I mean, this is early stages. I think the situation on our end is that we believe we have data that justifies taking the TG program into a registration program in resected pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. This will require a large number of patients, a long study, and it's something that it's challenging for us to lift by ourselves at the current stage, and we also don't have financing to run that trial. So we're actively seeking a partner or financing to be able to go forward with that program. And we have just recently started actively marketing our partnering intentions, and we're establishing the dialogues that we can.
So I think with the money we have at the moment, we could foresee to start a small phase 2 trial, and just to keep the momentum up and continue to include patients and recruit patients with pancreatic cancer. I think that has a value in itself. But in order to make such a trial into a registrational program, we must, as Eric say, probably rely on the financial muscle of a partner of some sort. Doesn't necessarily have to be a big pharma partner, but some sort of organization that, that chips in and then pays for part of it.
All right, makes sense. Okay, so that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Patrick Ling of DNB Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Just a few questions. The first one is really about upcoming data event. How certain you are that on the timing of this? I mean, when I listen now, Øystein, you talked about these squares on your slide number 21, that it indicated that we might produce data. To me, it sounds a little bit uncertain. So could you just give us some sort of feeling for how certain you are that, that these data points will actually materialize when you hope that they will?
Well, when we guide on data the way we're doing, our best guess, and this, of course, is the future, so you never know for certain, but our best guess is that we are going to produce data within the indicated time frame. But as I said, this is an indication of data, and particularly when it comes to the second part of 2017, we are indicating that we'll have interim data in a subset of patients in these specific three trials. And how certain am I? How uncertain am I? You know, we are recruiting patients at the moment, and come October, November, we will know with a greater level of accuracy how many patients and what sort of data we will be able to produce.
Okay, great. Fair enough. And also a question on the financing. You talked about the 206 million NOK that you raised now in the private placement and the repair issue. Could you just give us a feeling for what the net amount will be after all the costs and fees? What should we expect now in the cash flow for Q3?
So we don't have any audited final numbers on that, but the current cash balance stands at about 300 million NOK.
Okay, what's the net proceed of the capital increase? Is that a question?
Yes, that's the question.
Around 195 million.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then the last question on the ovarian colorectal cancer trial. Have you seen any changed interest from, for example, from MedImmune, given the recent setbacks that they've had with durvalumab for that trial? Or is it rather the other way around?
We have not. We haven't sensed any difference in their attitude or willingness to do this. So it's plans as before.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. May I remind everyone that if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. And our next question comes from the line of Mick Cooper of Trinity Delta. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Just one question. You talked about the increase in CD8 cells as kind of following treatment with Oncos. Could you give us an indication of how those increase in CD8 cells compares to that seen in other trials?
You mean with other products?
Yes, and the effect on overall survival with other products.
I think at least at the time when these data were reported, these were really the first. It was really the first time this type of data was reported pre and post treatment. I know Evec reported some data later on where they see, I think they see about 40% of patients having an infiltration of T cells compared to the 11 out of 12 that we have. We had about 40% stable disease in this trial compared to about 10% stable disease in the original T-VEC trials. Viralytics recently reported the data, but I'm not sure what the numbers are in terms of the increase of the CD8 T-cell count in the lesions, but they did have a very positive result when it comes to response ORR in melanoma.
Thank you.
Thank you. And there are no further questions at this time, so please go ahead, speakers.
Okay, in that case, we just want to thank you for following us through this second quarter and first half year presentation from TargetX. Thank you, and goodbye.
This now concludes our call. Thank you for attending. Participants, you may disconnect your lines.